You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to show number 310. Wow, 310. That seems like a lot of shows. Today is Sunday, August 9th. I am Kurt, no Steve again, but I am joined by Hamilton. So, Ham, let's get to it.
All right.
Tonight we'll discuss Markakis and AJ basically carrying the offense, our memories of the 95 World Series 20 years ago. That also seems insane. And the state of Williams Perez. But first, another trade. And this one, I honestly, we might not find anyone that objects to it. The Braves, after seemingly 2 years, have finally shed Chris Johnson. They were finally able to meet his trade demands, and they got rid of him and his bloated contract and his inability to hit righties and his attitude, and dumped him on the Indians for our old friend Michael Bourne, Nick Swisher, and his infectious energy, and $10 million in cash. So, Ham, first impressions. Mine are that you shed yourself of, obviously, one unproductive veteran and his bad contract for two, albeit shorter contracts. But Bourne and Swisher, they come off the books after 2016, and Chris Johnson obviously was signed through 2017. So, to me, it's a win off the bat.
They come off the – if neither of them gets a lot of plate appearances, they have vesting options for 2017, which the Braves essentially control just by giving them at-bats. So, yes. You know, I agree. I mean, I texted Steve – he texted me this trade, and I responded to him, Steve, wake up, you're dream texting, because I think this is the best – I mean, otherwise we would have to DFA Chris Johnson. There was no way we were getting rid of him. And I actually think – you know, first of all – it's good that Chris Johnson's not a Brave anymore. I mean, there were glimmers of him being able to produce, but overall he was below average everywhere. In the field, at the plate, his attitude was bad for the team, and I think it's a good for him that he gets a fresh start, and I think it's good for the Braves that he's gone. And I think it's a two-for-one. I mean, Kurt, you talked about when Uribe and Johnson left that the veteran leadership was leaving, and obviously that was compounded when we lost Jim Johnson and others and Grilly with the injuries. So we bring two veterans back. I mean, I think Swisher has underperformed this year, but he's got a good clubhouse presence. You know, he had double knee surgery a year ago, and the doctor told him you'll start to feel better in a year. And according to him, he's starting to feel better. So who knows? Maybe we get a little uptick from him. We certainly did in his first game as a Brave. And I think it's good. I mean, I think it's a no-lose situation. I think it also, especially, you know, Chris Johnson didn't cost us a game against the Giants this week with his boneheaded play when he thought there were two outs and there were only one against the Giants. But he was providing no value, and I think Swisher can provide a little bit more value as a backup to Freddie at first. So I think we won this trade if there were any winners to be had. But I think the Indians won too. They got what they wanted. We got what we wanted.
Yeah, and Chris Johnson, went 4-4 his first game for the Indians, and good for him. You know, it's great if a change of scenery is what that guy needed. God bless, and let's move on. And I think what we're gonna get, you mentioned it, and we saw it the very first night. We saw it last night, is their energy. Michael Bourne was considered by all a great presence in the clubhouse, a great teammate. Joe Simpson, of course, was saying, he never should have left the Braves in the first place. Well, the reason he left the Braves in the first place is because the Indians offered him nearly $50 million to come and play for them. But it's the positivity that Swisher brings. I mean, it's great. It's fun. I mean, and the Braves have kind of attached themselves to, I keep saying, mascot type of guys, and I don't mean that in a derogatory fashion, but I mean these guys that are these rah-rah guys, which you need those types of guys. I mean, you're going to be down, especially at this time of year, if you're not really competing for much, and to have the energy like that with Hinsky, guys like Gomes, you know, I mean, they've really kind of picked up a lot of these types of characters to fill the need that perhaps, and I keep saying this, that Freddie does not provide. It's like they have to fill this gap and bring these guys in. They've both been all-stars. They've both been productive in their careers. You mentioned Swisher and his knees in the year. He had a rehab stint in the minors where he batted 317. So he seemed like he's, you know, feeling good. And he was super excited to be coming to the Braves. I mean, you know, it's not often that you get two guys who have been around the block and get traded late in the year and get traded to a team that's basically in the same situation that their other team is. I mean, record-wise, the Indians are completely buried in the AL Central, but you know, I think they've got two fewer losses than the Braves do. So it's not like they're moving up into the playoff scenario, but they both seem very genuinely excited about coming back to Atlanta. You mentioned Swisher, obviously, is going to be playing first with Freeman out, but he can be a backup. And Bourne can play left. He can back up Maben in center. And, you know, once again, we're pointing every finger toward 2017. So,
yeah. I mean, you sort of wish, I mean, it's so true, but, and you sort of wish that there were younger guys, you know, other than Jace Peterson, maybe Yuri Perez. You know, I don't see a lot of rookies on the team right now who are like, those guys are going to be cornerstones of the 2017 lineup. You know, I mean, obviously Simmons and Freeman and those guys are, and hopefully Markakis. But you wish there were some rookies who we had who could learn, you know, from Swisher and from Bourne, who we would benefit from having those guys here now, so that in 2 years they would, you know, be able to take advantage of that. But it's still, I mean, it makes it fun to watch, and I think it you know, for some of the rookies that we do have, it's good to have those guys here. And even Simmons and some of the, you know, Peterson, it's good for those guys to be around winners, right? And people, veterans who have seen a lot.
Yeah, so. I mean, Swisher's got a World Series ring. But that's a good point. I mean, you know, Garcia, Yuri Perez, those guys are not young by any stretch of the imagination. They're both 30-ish. I mean, I know Garcia is. I don't know exactly how old Yuri Perez is, but
a little bit younger.
27, yeah. Something like that. But yeah, I mean, it's not like there's a ton of really young guys on this team to be part of that. Maybe the bullpen, but they're not going to suck up as much of it being out there. So how about things not to like about this trade?
I mean, I guess the only thing not to like is Swisher's health, right? I think Johnson was a little bit more durable, a little bit younger. I mean, it's funny. This is all based on pretending you're playing for something this year, right? I mean, I think Johnson, you know, if Swisher goes down and if his knees don't hold up, we really have no backup at first, unless we're just really just, you know, putting Turdo or Cunningham there or somebody. I don't know. But other than that, I don't see a lot of downside of this trade. I really see very little downside of this trade. Maybe, I guess the only other thing is, I don't see this happening, but you know, you end up being on the hook for that vested option on either one of those guys because something happens next year where they get their at bats or their plate appearances. You know, I don't see that happening, but maybe that's a downside. It seems truly like a win-win for both the Indians and the Braves.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a precipitous drop in what these guys were once. You know, basically not that they're comparable talent-wise, but we basically just took on the Ugla and B.J. Upton contracts from the Indians. They had both signed these guys for long-term contracts, and they both basically went there and got hurt and didn't produce at all. Swisher's deal was 65 for four seasons, and his WAR value has been 1.5 since he's been there. Bourne's was 48 over 4 years, and his WAR was 3.7, which is pretty good. But then you look at that he had a 6.1 WAR his last year with the Braves. So his on base percentage, Bourne's is 313, which obviously Freddie's going to bat him lead off a lot. So this is why we just got rid of Peraza, is because he does not get on base as a single sitter. And that's exactly what Michael Bourne is. He does not walk a lot. And Swisher is batting 198. So, but you hope that, like, there's been a bunch of these guys that have come in. I mean, Kelly Johnson was having a terrible go of it the past couple of years and had a great season enough that somebody actually traded for the guy. So Bourne can certainly come back and do the same thing. He clearly enjoyed his time in Atlanta. You hope that that's an impact. And Swisher seems very excited, talking about that a team wants him. Not maybe that Cleveland didn't want him, but, you know, they were willing to give up his contract. So, but yeah, I mean, I guess the age, and if they don't do anything, and they're just holding up spots that maybe could be filled by somebody younger and cheaper.
What's the loss, though?
Yeah, absolutely. So do you think that the guys on the TV were going on and on about what they can contribute? We just talked about it some. But do you agree that the team is better with Bourne over Jurie and Left and Swisher, obviously starting now with Freddie Hurt, but better on the bench over Cunningham or Turto?
No and yes. I hope that Bourne doesn't get more starts than Jurie. I see no future for Bourne as a Brave long term. And I see maybe some. You mentioned that Jurie's a little bit older, but he's having a better season. He's hitting .288. Bourne's only at .243. Bourne has 13 stolen bases, but he's played a lot more games, had a lot more plate appearances. So I hope Bourne is not taking starts from Jurie. But I am happy that Swisher is a better option than Turto or Cunningham off the bench. And I think that he's a veteran. He's seen a lot of these pitchers. He just has seen a lot more pitches in general in his career. Hopefully his knees are healthy. So I definitely think he's a better Boone off the bench. And I think Bourne is too. As a pinch runner, as someone coming in late, you wish he walked more. But I think both those guys off the bench and as spot starters are great. I don't want either one of them really starting that much.
Yeah, and with Jurie, I totally agree with you on that aspect. He does not, I mean, it's all singles. He's only got 4 extra base hits the entire year and 111 at bats. So that's, that is what it is. And as a pinch hitter, he's not so much. They've really not given him many opportunities, but that might be because that's not really his forte. He's only 1-for-5 as a pinch hitter this year. While he is batting .292 in the 8th spot, which is probably the best place for him to hit, and right. He's obviously thriving there. As far as the two guys with behind Swisher with Cunningham or Turto coming off the bench, I mean, Cunningham's catch on Saturday night was great, and you have that aspect of it that he is a good defensive player, but neither one of these guys can really hit all that much right now. So I think I'm with you on Swisher over them as well. So, okay, quick lightning round. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most likely, Swisher is on the 2016 opening day roster.
2.
Yeah, I have a 3.5, but I was very low on that one. I think if anybody's going to be gone, it's going to be him because he seems more replaceable, I guess. Same question, 1 to 10. Bourne is on the 2016 opening day roster.
See, I think I'm different than you. I say 0 on Bourne. I just don't see the point of having him on the team. I guess, why not, right? If it's his last year, we're already on the hook for paying him. I do not want him to get his whatever number of plate appearance to vest for 2017. Maybe he has a nice audition here in these last couple months and somebody wants to pick him up. I just don't see the point of having him on the team with an eye towards 2017. So I'm a 0. I really don't think he'll be here. I think the Braves will try to move him.
Yeah, I went a little higher. Significantly higher, given that you said a 0. I went 6.5, and I think it's just because they're going to use him in all the positions in the outfield. He can back up Markakis. He can back up Maben, assuming Maben is still around. Potentially Maben is the trade piece now. I think that they really do like him. I think they're very excited to have him back as a Brave. So I think he has a very good chance of hanging around.
But I just hope they don't – I don't know what the plate – I guess it's probably – a number of plate appearances is commiserate with being a starting or an everyday center fielder, maybe. It would be a disaster because we'd owe him $17 million, right? Yeah, so I want him to be a utility guy, but I think that he would have more value as us as if we could convince someone to take him off our hands. Maybe it's $17 million. That's a pretty
hefty price.
Well, maybe
if he has a good first half next year, he can be a trade deadline player.
True.
So moving on, the offense – has not been all that great. They did pick it up quite a bit this week, but we have not really talked about the contributions. Speaking of veteran presence on this team, Markakis and AJ are basically carrying this offense.
So
let's talk about that just very quickly because it's really been quite remarkable.
Yeah, well, the big shame is that it's all for naught, right? If you look at both of them, they're having sort of career years offensively and not the best year of their lives, but certainly – top 5. Take away the power from Markakis, which somebody did. You know, this season, Markakis has been great. He's got his average is high. He's getting on base a lot. You know, other than when he was batting fifth, he's hit over 300 at every slot in the lineup, wherever Freddie has put him. He's done it all. And AJ he's our offensive MVP. You know, Freddie had all the numbers and everything until he got injured. But if you're looking at it over the course of the season, I think he's our best player. And I just think it's a shame that these two guys are really, you know, when you think about, you have your all-stars, you have your young rookies, and these veterans come and you hope to fill the gap. And if these guys were having the type of years they're having on just an average offensive team, right, where you had a couple all-stars who were playing every day and some young guys who were producing and up and coming, the Braves offense would be unstoppable, right? But unfortunately, it's all for naught with both these guys. But it's amazing. It's really something.
Yeah, and they, of course, ironically, as often the case, we choose to highlight guys, and the day that we choose to highlight them, they both
lose their hitting streaks.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, you know, Markakis going in today had the longest hitting streak in the National League. And of course, he came up in a huge position today when he could have tied the game and flied out to right field, but almost got it over Ichiro's head. If he had just kind of flattened that ball out a little more, I think that scores two and we're tied and who knows what happens. But he hit 379 over that streak. He hadn't struck out all week long. And of course, he strikes out twice today. But yeah, you're right about AJ. I mean, it continues. I mean, it seems like he had one bad month, but it's just been something to behold other than that. And during this 12-game streak he was just on, he hit 426, which
crazy.
It's pretty amazing. And you got to consider that the void that's created with Freeman not being in there, with Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe lost off this team. Again, to Steve's point, pointing out how bad the offense on this team can be at times, it's pretty amazing that they've scored any runs, and it's really contributable to these guys so much.
You want Pierzynski back next year?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, especially if you've got this young pitching that we're going to be riding.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing is that, you know, I know there's been a lot of lumps in the row, but he's done a pretty good job bringing these guys on board as well. You know, I mean, he's really done an amazing job.
Well, and I was reading a quote, and I won't say it verbatim, but they were asking Tehran about Pierzynski, and he was like, yeah, he can be mean, which, you know, I've got kids, you've got kids. Sometimes you got to be mean with kids. Sometimes
yeah.
You got to get the way you get a point across to them is, you know, it's not all balloons and rainbows. Sometimes you got to get up their butts a little, and that's might be what some of these guys need. So,
yeah.
Talking about getting up butts, I don't know. I'm trying to segue
Let's stop talking about that.
So really the greatest moment in Braves history was celebrate the 20th anniversary, which just, again, that seems astonishing. They celebrated the 20th anniversary of the 95 World Series championship team Saturday night. And it was awesome to see so many of those guys back. I mean, obviously, I think it's Greg McMichael is the one that's in charge of getting all the alums back, and just to see so many of those players. And honestly, I had forgotten, like, Steve Avery was still on the 95 team. I had forgotten a lot of the guys that were still on that team. But what's your favorite memories of that year?
So first of all, I'd like to give a little shout out. It's the 50th anniversary of the Braves being in Atlanta also, and the 125th anniversary of the Braves as a franchise. So those are two okay stats,
longest
I guess.
Operating franchise in baseball.
That's right. Woo. So, you know, I think about, there's a couple of things I think about the postseason, about the season in general. First of all, it's memorable because we got Marquise Grissom in the offseason as our starting center fielder. And in such a short run with the Braves, he was one of my favorite Braves. I just loved Marquise Grissom. So that was
for Roberto Kelly.
I know. It was such a steal. You know, that was the Uber season for Maddux. It's when he won 19 games and had a 1.63 ERA and won the Cy Young. I mean, I always loved Maddux, but that was the season, I think, that transcended all of the other Maddux seasons for me. And then one more thing, you know, about the season is we just crushed the NL East. So the gap between the second and fifth place teams, which at the time were the Mets, the Phillies, the Marlins, and the Expos, was only 2.5 games. So between second place and last place, the spread was 2.5 games. The spread between the Braves and the Mets and Phillies, who tied for second, was 21 games. So we just destroyed the East. And, you know, two other things that stick out to me. First of all, I feel like that was our best offensive lineup. In a lot of ways, that was our most iconic lineup. Like, if you were to say to me, name the 90s Braves lineup, it would be, and here it is, Blauser, Grissom, Chipper, Justice, Klesko, Lemke, Javi, and Crime Dog. Right? So, you know, a tip of the cap to Gant, a tip of the cap to Galarraga, some others. But that's the Braves of the 90s for me, that lineup right there. And it all came together in that postseason. We homered in every game, so our power was on effect there. And then all capped off by Glavin's Game 6 gem, which is, you know, you think about the Jack Morris, John Smoltz game. I don't really remember the stats of that game. I remember it was awesome. But I remember Maddox or Glavin going 8 innings, giving up one hit against the Indians. Obviously, Willers came in for the save. I mean, that was the most iconic, dominant pitching performance in the postseason for the Braves. So I there's a lot that stands out for me for that season as well as for that postseason. What about you?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is amazing. I'll talk about that Game 6 in a minute. But you talk about the 21-game gap. I mean, the Braves started that season 20-17. And were in third place, and then went on a run leading up to the All-Star game where they won. They went 20-5, so they started 20-17. So that means they go on. They finish with 90 wins, so they go 70-37 to close out the season, which is just insane. I mean, that is absolutely insane, and that's like, you know, when they brought over McGriff and closed out the year to catch the Giants. I mean, the streaks that the Braves would go on, and it's because of the pitching. I mean, you had that starting pitching, and there were no days off for other teams. And it might have helped that the East was really terrible. But
it's really the big three, because Merker and Avery both had losing records. I mean, Avery was 7-10, I think, that season, and Merker was not much better. But the other guys were all 15-game winners.
Proving my point. No, I'm
yes. Yes.
But that was the first year that they had split into three divisions, and they had the wild card. And amazingly, at the time, they decided that what would happen in the first round was that the higher seed would go to the lower seed to play the first two games of the series. So it was at Colorado for two games, and then they came back to Atlanta for potentially the final three games, which, again, utterly stupid.
Yeah, especially that team.
Yeah.
Well, utterly stupid. But and then you think about the Braves going to Colorado and the success they had there was almost unfair.
Well, but I mean, that was that Bash Brothers Colorado team with Bichette and Galarraga and those guys.
Walker.
Vinny Castilla. Yep. It's just like having the All-Star game decide the World Series, is that you send a team on the road for the first two games. And I remember getting a little stressed at the time thinking, why do they have to go on the road? But it's almost like they got through that. Then they destroyed the Reds, swept the Reds. And then, you know, you look at that Cleveland team that had so much firepower, and we end up out-homering them in the World Series. They just get completely dominated by our pitching. I think mm-hmm. that I think I saw somewhere that their batting average, collective batting average for the World Series was less than 160. So we just totally shut them down. And I mean, I've said it 1,000 times. Everybody that listens to this show knows that I was at Game 6 when we beat the Indians. And
really?
Yes, they were asking Glavin the other night about who got the hit off of him. And he knew immediately. But I mean, if he...
Was it Eddie Murray?
No, it was... I think it was... Oh, God, no, I can't remember. Who was the second baseman?
Alomar.
No.
No. I don't remember. Anyway, we'll waste time on it. Yep.
I mean, if he throws in... I mean, that game should be considered one of the greatest postseason games of all time. And I don't think it falls anywhere in anybody's pantheon of greatest postseason games. But, I mean, if he throws a no-hitter... It might be top two or three greatest. I mean, a no-hitter to win the World Series.
Yeah, well, especially after what the Braves had been through, right? I mean, I'm totally with you 100%. But even take it out of context, a one-hitter, a no-hitter in a closing game for a World Series is great. But add to it that the Braves had been through so much and had been known as the choker, and they were getting the Buffalo Bills moniker or whatever. And he steps up and says, it stops here in Atlanta tonight. And it was just, I'm with you. I told that it goes, it's my pantheon as the greatest, as one of the greatest postseason games ever.
And I mean, it should go down. And I mean, I'm sorry, it's to win a World Series and you throw a one hitter. I mean, it should be considered, and maybe I just haven't heard enough baseball people talk about it, but, and he was not a guy that was going to throw a lot of no hitters, you know. I mean, he pitched to contact, so for him to do that on that night, it's pretty extraordinary. So, okay, time for fair or foul. We throw something out there, and if you agree, it's fair, and if you disagree, it's foul. So, Ham,
yes,
two bad starts for Williams Perez in a row here. So, fair or foul, between now and the end of the season, he figures it out and sets himself up to return to the rotation next season.
Well, he has a strong arm, and has stayed strong even to late innings. The other night, he was still throwing in the 90s into the sixth or seventh, so however late he was. I know that he got bashed a little early. And we have to get – I mean, over his last four starts, he's faced the Mets, the Pirates, the Phillies, and the Giants. So I think you have to take that into account anyway. So I think fair, he will – he's going to figure it out. I think he's going to give himself a good shot – be in the rotation next season, and I think we'll need him.
Yeah, I'm with you. And obviously the Phillies game, that was a very hot offensive team. They're still playing well, and the Giants always play well in Atlanta. So I'm not sure you can totally hold those against him. I think that just like any rookie, he's gonna hit a wall, and we're gonna get some bad starts out of him the rest of the season. So I think that's something we should just come to expect. We've seen it a lot. We can look at my shot in the dark when we touch on that and see that, you know, some of these young guys are getting touched up a lot more right now. But I, regardless of what happens the rest of the season, he's in the rotation mix for next year. I mean, that's just, there's just no way that's not a possibility that's going to happen. So,
right.
So fair or foul, in July, Jace Peterson's batting average OBP was 174, 248. Yerch. In August, it's 345, 387. So fair or foul, the rest of the way, his batting average will be over 270, and his OBP will be over 325.
So let me throw some Jekyll and Hyde numbers at you for Jace. So at home through the season, he's batted 277. Away, he's batted 224, which for the rest of the season would work in his favor, as the Braves have more home games left than road games. So that's a ball.
And more home games than any other team in baseball.
Yes. And somewhere Julio is smiling. Tehran, that is. But so he's got that form. But when the Braves wins, he bats 275. When they lose, he bats 224. I think there's going to be more losses than wins from here on out. So that's a strike against him. You know, in limited stats, he actually is much better when he's in the bottom third of the lineup, especially at seventh. Where he's batting over 350. But so I think he's going to be at the top of the lineup a lot going down the stretch, which is a strike against him, I would say. And if you look at who he's batted best against, it's been against the NL West, actually, than any other league. And he's done okay against the Mets and the Phillies, but I still think we're going to have a lot of games here against the East down the stretch, which is a strike against him. So I'm going to say foul. I think he's not going to end the season over 270 or 325.
I'm going to go halvesies. His batting average is kind of seesaws, 246, 282, 263, 174, 313. So I'm going to say that September he's going to bat in somewhere in the 250 range, which would put him obviously below the 270. His OBP has stayed a little more consistent than that. So I'm going to say he goes a little over the 325. So fair on that one, around 335. So
no halvesies.
Halvesies. I'm always about the halvesies. So moving on, right. We are off to the silver lining for the week. Of course, we talk about something good that happened this week. So what you got?
What do I got? Well, even though we talked about him earlier, and even though his streak ended today, I got to go with Nick Markakis. Over the past 7 days, he's hit .464 with two doubles, nine RBIs, which has been a significant chunk of the runs that the Braves have scored. I'd love to see a little more power, obviously, but I'll take it.
There was quite a few guys. Obviously, Markakis, Przinski. We talked about Jace Peterson had a pretty good week. I went Vizcaino just because I like what he's doing as the closer of the future. He got one win this week. He pitched 2.2 innings, only gave up 3 hits and had 2 saves. So he is my silver lining for the week.
Nice.
Next up, of course, is our favorite shot in the dark, our predictions for the coming week. First, let's look back at last week. Maybe we shouldn't. first up is our listener shot in the dark that came from Caleb Calbo. Sorry, Caleb, I'm butchering your last name, who predicted that the Braves would hit at least one homer in each game. They started off great. They hit 4 homers in the first game against the Giants and then only hit homers in 2 of the remaining 6 games. So close, but no cigars. Thank you, Caleb, for playing. We appreciate you chiming in and, of course, ring back in this week. So, Ham, let's check on our predictions for last week. Ham, I mocked you and even mocked you about how to say his name. Adonis
Garcia.
And I was
right. Yes.
You were. 2 homers and 8 Ks is what you had. He only had 4 Ks, but he did hit 2 homers.
And a big one, too.
So that's pretty spot on.
Yes, thank you.
Steve rode the Shelby Miller train straight into the ground, as I did. He predicted that he would get 2 wins this week. The Braves went 0-2 in his 2 starts. He only had 1 loss, but again, he had no run support. They scored. He only gave up 4 earned runs, but they only scored 1 run or 2 runs while he was pitching.
Ugh, poor guy.
Yeah, he pitched. He had the lead against the Giants, and then the bullpen completely imploded on him, and they lost that game. So he will be back at it this week, and hopefully this winless streak will finally come to an end. I mentioned before that I went with the young starters. Folty, Perez, and Whistler had 4 starts this week. I predicted that they would go combined 3-1 and give up a total of 8 earned runs.
How'd that go?
Yeah. Where's the trumpet sound? They went 1-2 and gave up 18.
Oh.
18 earned runs.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Williams Perez, I think, gave up 6 in his start. So...
yeah.
Not so much. So looking ahead for this... oh, well, of course, Sam, you are the winner. You get off to a hot start in September.
August.
Whatever.
Thank you. Whatever.
August. I'm jumping ahead. I'm ready for Halloween. So you lead the month 1-0.
Nice.
So looking ahead, Steve is immediately on the Michael Bourne train. He has him hitting over 350 this week. So, Ham, what do you have?
I'm going to be the anti-Steve this week, I think. I'm going Bourne hits under 200 this week. So I like Michael Bourne. I'm glad he's here, but I'm not so high on him yet.
I'm going to offer that you're the anti-Steve most weeks.
Thank you.
Yes. I am going with a reverse jinx. So please note in your books when you write this down at home that this is a reverse jinx. I don't want this to happen. Shelby Miller does not get his win this week. He gives up 4 earned runs and 5 innings pitched against the D-backs. So everybody out there, get your shot in the darks in by game time on Tuesday. We have a weird 5-game schedule this week that starts on Tuesday. So make sure you get them in game time on Tuesday, and we will track them over the week and let you know how it goes. So, Ham, looking back at our win-loss records for last week's 4-3 homestand, Steve and I both went 3-4. Ham, because you hate the Braves, you went 2-5.
It's weird, though. You know, I think we've obviously made these predictions for a long time, but we haven't really tracked them until, I don't know, what, 5 or 6 weeks, maybe, Curtis? And it feels like we never get them right. I think it speaks to how unpredictable the Braves are. But I don't think anybody has actually nailed their – maybe once somebody has nailed their prediction for the one loss record for the week, which –
Well, and it's a lot of average play. So when you – get excited, they're going to go 5-1, and they'll go, 3-4.
Yeah.
They're going to be terrible this week. They're going to go 1-5, and they'll go 3-4.
4-3, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, speaking of, coming up, weird week. We've got 5 games this week. The Braves, I don't think, have a game off in, 2 months. So they have 2 off this week. So we've got two games in Tampa and then three back home against Arizona. So Tuesday, we get Erasmo Ramirez, who is 8-4 with a 3.83 ERA. He is 0-3 and has given up 14 runs, 11 earned in his last three starts. So he is on a little bit of a skid. He gets Williams Perez. So Wednesday, we have Jake Odorizzo, which is nice with a nice white clam sauce. 6-6 with a 2.77 ERA. Three of his losses, he's gotten Shelby Millard. He has only given up 7 earned runs in three of his losses. So he has not had the best luck pitching. He gets Matt Whistler. Friday against the Snakes, we get
Robbie. Man, I hope Whistler just fits. Get the ball over the plate. Just throw strikes, man. Yeah. Just throw strikes.
Once again, a big week we need out of our three young starters.
Yeah, yeah.
Robbie Ray for the Diamondbacks on Friday, who is 3-7 with a 3.13 ERA. So it sounds like he has not had much luck from his support either. He gets Tehran at home. Patrick Corbin, who is 2-3 with a 4.08 ERA, gets Folty, who really did not look too bad in his last start. And then Ruby De La Rosa, who I loved her third jazz album. He's got 9-5 with a 4.56 ERA against the aforementioned Shelby Miller. So Steve, riding high again, 4-1. Ham, what do you got?
I have 3-2. I think we go 1-1 and then 2-1.
Ditto.
Nice.
So, Ham.
That's the show.
That's the show.
Woo!
Please make sure you have us in your RSS.
Steve will be back, everybody.
Steve will be back next week. Ham and I might not be, but Steve will definitely be back. You might be due for a Steve solo show.
Yes.
So please make sure you have us in your RSS feeds or subscriptions on iTunes or Stitcher so that you don't miss any of our weekly shows. As always, check us out at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com for past shows, to check out our blogs, and to post in our comment sections. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. We do have a YouTube page as well. So thanks for listening as always, and go Braves.
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.